You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. The countdown to blast off is rapidly approaching. We're breaking it down. Tee off in less than 48 hours' time. The PME, Pat Mayo, joins us and bats leadoff on the program today. We get one of the best golf cappers in the business's perspective on the U.S. Open. We're breaking down the U.S. Open on Morenci Unfiltered, 10 o'clock Eastern tonight on the Fantasy Sports Television Network with the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart. So we've got some golf talk for you, but we're not done there. The Professor Dame Alinsky, the pregame.com PhD, so to speak, will join us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. Dame Alinsky joins us. We'll get his thoughts on the NBA Finals. Where does he rank the Golden State Warriors as far as all-time teams are concerned? Kevin Durant, LeBron James. How about LeBron last night after the game? How about LeBron? LeBron was asked about the way that the NBA is right now with quote-unquote super teams. And LeBron James basically said last night, nobody's beating Golden State for a long time. Like, he's beaten down. LeBron James, like, I don't know, I've got to think about things. Like, you know, think about things? What does this mean? With LeBron, who knows what the hell that means? But he actually said, they said, well, you know, you didn't seem to mind super teams when you were on the Miami Heat. And he said, no, I've never played for a super team before. You never played for a super team before? Do you remember, LeBron, you doing not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six crap? You got a short memory, LeBron. Look, the only thing shorter than LeBron's memory is his hairline. And I can say that because, hey, you know, look at me. But nevertheless, so we'll talk basketball. We're not done with basketball yet. We got the NBA draft next week. And, you know, I got a lot of hot takes as far as the NBA, the draft, the Warriors, the Cavaliers, the state of the league, and everything else in between on the program. But that's not going to make us money tonight, is it? The only way we can make money tonight is if we bet on baseball. And Dave Malinsky is going to help us do that. We'll talk baseball with the Professor Dave Malinsky. Mike Cardano. We're only talking baseball and a little basketball with Mike Cardano as well. Mike Cardano said, wow, I'm the last guest on a great show. So I just tweeted him back right before the show started. Don't screw it up, Cardano. You know what I mean? You're batting cleanup here. Don't screw it up. I want you to pull an Aaron Judge. Smack it. Smack it. How about the Yankees last night? How about our picks last night? Warriors minus the 8.5. Game goes over the number. Halftime, full time. As far as the playoffs are concerned, NHL and NBA, we did very well. I should be rich, but I'm not because I'm an idiot. But Mike Cardano is going to be joining us. Bad money management. That's why I'm not on Wall Street, all right? But nevertheless, ton of stuff to get to on the program, so let's get right down to business. The Golden State Warriors missed out on a chance of immortality. They could have become the first team to run the playoff table, go undefeated, and really, you know, cement themselves as potentially the greatest team of all time. They lose one game. Does that mean they're not potentially the greatest team of all time? No. I will tell you right now. I've been watching basketball a long time. I started watching the NBA like in about 1979 or so. Really got into it in the early 80s, etc. So my whole life I've been a hardcore NBA guy. I'm not going to say this is the best team ever. Those Laker teams, those Celtic teams, those Bull teams. But nevertheless, I'm not here to debate who the greatest team ever is. And I'm not here to debate whether Kevin Durant earned this or not. As I see the haters came out of the woodwork last night. Like Kevin Durant is some kid from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Can I please play with the Golden State Warriors in the finals one day, please, sir? Yeah, that's what happened. That's what happened. And I'm also sick and freaking tired of people complaining about the NBA. Ooh, the NBA. Everybody wants it always. Basically, this is what's wrong with social media and what's good about dictatorships. People are stupid jerk-offs that don't know what the hell they're talking about. And they bitch for the sake of bitching. So let me get this straight. Everyone, you know, older people and even ex-NBA players, you're all like way, you know, insulted that LeBron James is compared to Michael Jordan. So we all yearn for the Michael Jordan era, right? Michael Jordan's the best. I don't have a problem with it. But we all yearn for the Jordan era. When I'm with Jordan, he won six freaking times. The people look, oh, the Michael Jordan era sucked because, you know, it was so predictable. You know, there was no drama in it. Yeah, I know. There was no drama in it when the Lakers were dominating. You know, and as far as Kevin Durant goes, Kevin Durant didn't join a team that won five championships in a row. They lost last year. They lost. They've won once. Boo-hoo, Kevin Durant. Ooh, worst guy ever. Rode the coattails. Yeah, rode the coattails. You know, coming into last night's game, there were two players in the history of the National Basketball Association who had won four scoring titles and were NBA champions. You know who they were? Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. And now Kevin Durant. Yeah, he got lucky. And the Golden State Warriors are ruining the NBA somehow. You know what? Other teams were free to draft Steph Curry. They didn't. Other teams were free to draft Draymond Green. They didn't. Other teams were free to draft Klay Thompson. They didn't. Other teams were free to hire Steve Kerr as a head coach. He was a television analyst. Who hired him? They did. All right? It's not as if though this was given to them. I'm so sick and tired. We live in a society right now of a bunch of pinko commie punk-ass brats. All right? Everybody's staring at their phones all the time. Me. People go on vacations. They go see the pyramids in Egypt. They take a picture of themselves instead of the pyramid. Bunch of self-centered, narcissistic pukes who will complain about everything no matter what. Bitch. Ooh, it's ruining the league. It's unpredictable. The NHL is great. The same damn team won 2 years in a row. All right? The same damn teams win every year in the NHL. Somehow the NBA has been ruined. Dynasties are good. Kevin Durant is good. And like Kevin Durant said, it's not his fault or the Golden State Warriors' fault that the Orlando Magic suck, or that the Nets continuously trade their draft picks away, or that the LA Lakers do stupid things all the time. You know, it's like other GMs get a free pass. It's like, oh, let's pour on the hate on the teams that are actually good and the organizations that actually try. I remember in the old days when George Steinbrenner was alive, people acted as if though like somehow it was unfair. Ooh, how dare he spend his money on players and try to win for the fans? We as sports fans are getting screwed over by our piece of crap teams. The Buffalo Bills, they don't care about winning. They care about making money. You know, team, the Montreal Canadiens don't care about winning. They care about making money. At least the Golden State Warriors care about winning, and I'm not going to rip them for it. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Things are heating up in here. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome Pat Mayo into the studio. Dave Malinsky will join us in a couple of moments. Mike Cardano will join us a little bit later on. So we've got golf, basketball, and baseball talk for you on the program. Tomorrow, we begin our college football conference previews with the American Athletic Conference with Playbook.com's Mark Lawrence. Pat Mayo, Pat, you're ready to rock and roll. U.S. Open.
Ready to win? I hope.
Are you going to win?
If Dustin wins, no. The answer is no, I will not win. If Rahm wins, the answer is no, I'm not going to win. And those are like the two guys that everyone is sort of in on because this course is basically tailor-made for them.
Are you approaching this? Are you looking for longer shots as opposed to the favorites?
Yeah, I went down the list a lot. And really, the only name that I jumped on, only because the odds dipped, was Justin Rose. He opened at like 14-1. He's dropped down to 25-1. And I wanted to play someone from the top of the card, one of the elite players, and for whatever reason, people are off Rose. That's fine. I'll jump on Rose.
I don't want to worry you, but that's my pick.
There we go. We can win together.
That's my pick. I gave it last night on Red Heat and Rage Radio. He's won a U.S. Open before. Course is made for him. I wanted to ask you, though, you know, the perception generally is it's the U.S. Open, but generally Americans don't win. But it's not really the case. Americans have won the last 2 years, but Euro guys have won four of the last seven. But this course itself, Pat, does it play itself and lend itself to some of the Euro players that are used to playing link-style courses, windy, rough, fescue, etc.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there. It's the conditions that could get a bit wonky because there's no trees at Erin Hills. So what you're going to look for is weird directional wind each day. So one day it's coming out of the north, next day it's coming out of the east, and it can get up to like 22, 25 miles per hour. Plus the conditions are going to be a bit soggy. And like you mentioned with the fescue, they're trimming it on some of the holes. But listen, if you put it into the fescue, these fairways are 50% wider than any other U.S. Open course in history. That's on you.
They're like runways, Pat. Yeah. They're like airport runways. Yeah. Basically, they're like just hit it and yeah.
Yeah, if you venture off
massive. That, they're the biggest fairways in the history of a major championship.
And then you have like 5 yards of like regular rough, then you're in the fescue. And we've seen these videos all week long, like people hiding in the fescue
so
and no one can see them.
So there's going to be low scores then?
I think so. I think with the damper conditions, plus it's a par 72 for the first time since 1992 at Pebble Beach, which means two extra par fives on the course, which means easier holes, more scoring. There's a couple drivable par fours too, but you're going to see your guys shoot 85 like you always do. It's still the U.S. Open. They're going to make it difficult.
I ask you this, Pat, on a serious note, it's the longest course ever.
Yeah.
So it's playing longest. I think they did a U.S. amateur once in this distance. They're saying they could stretch it to 8,000 if they wanted to.
They can bring it down as well
if they wanted to. Just, you know, it would be cool, right? Just to get to the 8,000. But does this have an effect on players over 4 days?
I don't know. Apparently the walk is what's going to kill everyone.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's massive.
And between the holes, it's the longest, like, hole to hole to hole
exactly.
to hole. So, I mean, they're not out there taking carts. They have to walk. But come on. Like, they're walking without bags. If you can't walk 5 miles, that's on you.
I don't know. Have you seen some of these guys?
I have seen some of these guys.
All right. So, one thing that I've also noticed from a betting perspective, I'm always looking at the trends and the angles here. One thing that I have noticed is this is the longest that we've gone without a playoff.
Yeah, it's never been 9 years.
It almost feels like we're due for a playoff, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, we just had one at the Masters. And these things are all really random in how they come out. I mean, Dustin Johnson almost got sucked into a playoff last year because of a rules violation, which wasn't even really a rules violation.
You can get a playoff. Will it go to a playoff in a plus 350 range?
Yeah, we were looking at you can get playoff plus 300 or one stroke at plus 250 if you just want to bet winning margin. I think that's probably where you want to go with it. I don't love those bets, though, because they're all really, really random.
All right, so like we said, it's a long course. The greens are pretty easy. There's no surprises in the greens. The bunkers are going to be brutal. That's one thing. And I was reading an interview with the golf architect, and he said, yeah, these aren't normal bunkers where
they look like British Open
guys
bunkers.
Are able to just blast out. He goes, they're going to have some weird lies and some weird stuff in these bunkers.
Yeah, there's a couple of par threes where the greenside bunkers, you're going to have to play out backwards if you actually want a chance to bogey the hole, if you try to go for it. Like, you, and that's the whole thing. That's why when you look at the U.S. Open, veteran players have done really well. Yes, you've had your Rorys that have popped up that just overpower a course. But historically speaking, you have guys with veteran presence, good players that know how to manage a course well.
Stupid things.
Yeah, that's why I don't like John Rahm here.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
unless John Rahm runs away with it, like, he's just too temperamental for this place.
Okay, so in yesteryears, DJ was that guy.
Yeah.
The big bear out there. Bam, bam. But bull in a china shop when he got close, got clumsy under pressure. He sort of shedded that right now. And he's really worked on his short game as well.
The putting and short game have been out of this world this year. That's why he is now the number one player in the world. And when you say, like, how the course is so long and you have to hit it in the fairway, Dustin hits basically every fairway. Like, his game is so much higher right now than everyone else's that it's kind of astonishing. But since his injury at the Masters, he hasn't quite been the same. He hasn't won since. The putting has slipped a little bit back to where he used to be, so he's not at full facilities right now like he was at the beginning of the season.
Three mysteries of the world, Pat. Who really killed Kennedy? Is there collusion with Trump and Russia? And what really happened with Dustin Johnson?
Well, he hurt his back, apparently.
I don't know.
That's all I know.
TerezOwens.com, and they're never wrong.
No, never.
They reported he injured it having sex.
That's not a bad one. You got to laugh at a camera too, Drew.
No, I'm dead serious. That, you know, with Paulina, and that he pulled something.
Well, maybe that reverses back because he just.
I don't make the news. I just reported.
I think he had the kid today, or he had it last night. So he has baby swag going into this. Last time
I don't buy that baby.
Hey,
swag.
Listen. Last time this happened, Danny Willett won the Masters, and we all won a lot of money.
How many babies have been born since then?
Well, within like 2 days of the start of the competition.
He's won like.
Duffner had a kid this week too.
All right. Okay, so DJ,
I can't
do it at plus 700 only. So what I found interesting that a couple of guys that you have, let's start off with a guy that you've got circled here, Shane Lowry in the 70-1 range. Speaking of Dustin Johnson ruining somebody's day, Lowry hasn't been the same since, Pat, but you think he could surprise people?
Yeah, he's strung together a bunch of quality for performances here. He kind of gagged it at Wentworth 3 weeks ago, but he came back and played really well at Memorial. He just kills it off the tee. And it's not just distance. The big, like, key stat I'm looking for is strokes gained off the tee. And that doesn't necessarily imply that you hit the ball 335 yards like you're Dustin Johnson or John Rahm, but you need to put yourself in good positions to hit your second shot. So there's a bunch of guys like that in the field that don't necessarily crush it. I mean, they're not short off the tee, but they're not the longest hitters on tour. And all season long, Lowry's been scoring on par fours, killing it off the tee, and his approaches have started to get a lot better too. Plus, I mean, if we look back to last year, the whole narrative around Dustin Johnson was, oh, he gagged it on the 18th hole. He came second. This was his redemption. Well, who came second at the U.S. Open last year? Shane Lowry. He had the 54-hole lead. He plays really well in strong fields and tough courses, and this is both.
He had a four-shot lead after 54. All right, I've only got about 2-3 minutes here. This is the guy that actually somewhat intrigues me here, Pat. Kisner, 55-1.
Yeah, in that minor range, like 60, I mean, I guess 60-1 isn't crazy. His odds have been bet down, so people are on Kisner. But he's another one. Not long off the tee, but he's incredibly accurate and gains strokes off the tee. He's one of the best iron players on tour. He has a great short game. He's a great putter. He's one of the few players in the field that ranks highly in almost every single stat. And he had been gagging away tournaments for about 3 months. I mean, in 13 starts this year, he has 7 top 15s. But he got the win at Colonial 2 times out. He rebounded the next week, came 6th at Memorial. He's there. And there's always that Jim Furyk type of player, or, you know, even the Webb Simpsons of the world. When he ended up winning, they had good tee to green, don't necessarily bomb up. They don't make mistakes. And that's what Kevin Kisner is not going to do. You talk about these bunkers, well, they're littered throughout the fairway too. Kisner's so accurate off the tee, he's going to avoid that mess. He's just the guy that's not going to put himself into a lot of problems. So if the winning score is minus 12, he's not going to win. But if the winning score is minus 4, he has a legitimate shot, just like Brendan Grace at 45-1.
A player that I'm surprised more people aren't talking about is Sergio Garcia.
It's the odds. It's strictly the odds.
25-1. To me, he's playing with house money now.
Yeah.
You know, like
I like him here.
The pressure's not there anymore. He's got his major. He's won in America. Screw you. You know, Tiger's popping Xanax. I'm still out here. You know what I mean? Like, he's comfortable. It's like the Dove commercial. I'm Sergio Garcia. I'm comfortable in my own skin. 25-1. What do you think?
I like Rose at the similar price, and with the betting method that I used this week, I took a lot of shots down the list because, you know, it's the first time anyone's really seen this course outside of the 2011 U.S. Amateur, and there's like 8 guys in the field who made it to the knockout round that year. Spieth is one of them, actually. He made it to the quarterfinals that year. But it does allow for a longer shot to win when you just don't know a course. And if I'm going to go to the very top, I can only take one guy, and I went with Rose at the similar price as Sergio. But Sergio has made 9 straight U.S. Open cuts. It's just when it comes down to the putter, Sergio Garcia. And this is going to be greens that run pure, and the best putters will come to the top.
All right. You like a long shot, potential long shot on Byung-Hun An. He's in the 100-1 range. We got less than a minute. So your top players, Pat, give people some winners here.
All right. I got Rose. I got Lowry. Kisner and Grace is really my top end guys. Charles Schwartzel follows right behind them as well. And then if you do want some bombs, you're looking at Benny Ann at 100-1, Bernd Wiesberger at 125-1. I really like Tommy Fleetwood and Ross Fisher. Both Euros, both play well in the wind. Both are awesome tee to green. It's just the putter that tends to let them down. But we'll see what happens here.
Best of luck. Check out Pat's extensive videos, about 99 of them. Me and Cam Stewart hitting up the PGA scene on Morenci on Filtered U.S. Open. We'll have some props to make the cut and all that other type
David
of stuff.
David Lingmerth, plus 650 top Swede. Like, there's a prop for you.
You know, like you were mentioning Benny Ann. He hasn't missed a cut all year.
I know. Benny Ann's good.
How about a prop bet to make the cut?
Yeah, I guess so. I like to parlay those together, but I think I'm going to do the opposite this time and pick a whole bunch of guys not to make the
That's where the money is.
Well, it's top 60 in ties here. There's 156 guys in the field, so you know, you're getting pretty good odds
on that. Stay tuned. It's only Tuesday, right? Yeah. It's like a cocktail. We're putting together the props still, but we'll make some money. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, we shook things up a little bit. Normally, the Professor Dame Olinsky bats a leadoff. But Pat Mayo's got a show to do before we get into the podcast booth and do a show with the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart. I tell you, it's like a sports sweatshop around here. But we appreciate the professor accommodating us and hanging on a couple extra minutes. Dave Malinsky can read his column over at pregame.com, a new look, pregame.com. At that, you can find Dave's column in the forms section. Dave, always a pleasure. How you doing?
Oh, we're getting ready for a little U.S. Open, Gabe. And, you know, it's a nice thing to have this fill in right after the NBA because it means Thursday through Sunday we get a chance to be watching and betting something all day long.
Yeah, so, you know, you don't publicly cap the U.S. Open or PGA Golf, but you at times recreationally bet it and, ironically enough, live on a golf course.
Yeah, I mean, I will follow good people. You know, in this, and what's really interesting about an event like this is, you know, when the players don't know the course very well, you can sometimes pick up things earlier on Thursday and Friday to take advantage of in-running opportunities to be a little bit of a step ahead by watching instead of just reacting to the pure scores.
Yeah, for me, a couple of guys that catch my eye, and he's burnt me on a couple of occasions, but I think he's kind of flying under the radar here, and that's Jordan Spieth. Who does everything well. I think his game is made for this place. Justin Rose, another former U.S. Open winner in the 25-1 range. And I don't think Garcia is getting enough love, Dave. He's playing with house money right now.
No, the prices seem just fair enough to take a little plunge there with him.
Okay, Dave. So speaking of playing with house money right now, Kevin Durant gets his first championship. And I've noticed the public, and screw the public, but a lot of people on social media out there, oh, the Kevin Durant cupcake, Kevin Durant joined the Warriors. It's not the same. It doesn't mean as much somehow. And like I said off the top of the program, Kevin Durant wasn't some kid from the Make-A-Wish Foundation that asked to sit on the bench with the Golden State Warriors so he could get a ring. Kevin Durant was the best player in the NBA Finals. I brought up a fact, Dave, that coming into last night, only two players in NBA history had won four scoring titles and were NBA champions, Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. Kevin Durant now joins Wilt Chamberlain and Michael Jordan. He scored more than 30 points in all five games. I don't buy into the hate that people are directing towards Kevin Durant right now.
You know why they hate him? Because they can't beat him. You know, and this is what you'd want to ask. Every person who's going to hate on Kevin Durant for going to Golden State, ask them what they would have done given the option. Absolutely nothing wrong with what he did. It moves Durant now up to a higher level. But I'll tell you where this gets awkward, Gabe. I mean, the ratings last night were fantastic. NBA had to be very happy with that. Where it gets awkward with them is next season. Because when you look at it right now, there's not really anybody on paper who's going to make a run at Golden State or Cleveland. And if all they're going to have is the same season over again, that gets to be kind of awkward come next June. I mean, if the Warriors stay together, and it looks like they're going to, no one's going to beat this team anytime soon. So it was good for the NBA in this series. Might this be bad for the league going forward?
I think we might get this one more time, Dave. I think we might get it one more time. Now, LeBron James seemed resigned that they were going to lose this series earlier in the series. And he basically stated, they have Kevin Durant now. And, you know, that's the difference. Last night after, and obviously it's in the heat of the moment, he was emotional, he's upset, but he basically said what you just said. He said nobody's beating the Golden State Warriors for years to come. And, he sounded beaten down. He goes, they're all in their early 20s. he goes, they're all in their mid-20s. None of them are old. They're not going anywhere. And he goes, it's going to be extremely difficult. And then he said, I've never played for a super team before. And, like, forgetting that he played for the Miami Heat, that were the definition of the super team at the time. He started all of this, so to speak. But, Dave, and you mentioned it, the ratings were great, but people yearn for yesteryear. Oh, the Michael Jordan era. Jordan won six times. You know, I remember thinking, dear God, can anybody beat these guys? And people remember that era fondly. you know, the New York Yankees won all the time when Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams and everybody was there. That was a great era in baseball. Dynasties are good. And the thing with Kevin Durant, he didn't join a team that won 4 years in a row already. They lost last year.
It's just such a different time, because think about what if the Bulls had done what they did in the social media era. I mean, Michael Jordan got about as good a press as any major athlete of my lifetime. Suppose his hiatus, when he was forced out of the league for a little while, suppose social media was around at that time. Imagine how differently he gets perceived as an individual. It was just a different media era then. It's a lot tougher now, but now here's what the NBA has to do. They have to sell next season somehow. They have to find something to keep people plugged in. I mean, the Warriors could go through the motions, Gabe, and win 70 games next year. They could come out flat the entire season and go 70-12. How's the NBA going to keep people interested?
There was talk of them adding Chris Bosh.
I'd love to see Chris Bosh healthy enough to play somewhere.
That's the thing. Like, I don't know. I guess the NBA says he can't play, right? They're in limbo here.
Yeah, of course, the one thing, and here's what's scary about the Warriors, they could get better because they essentially played without a center in the NBA. Zaza Pachulia never played a minute in the fourth quarter of any game. What if they go out and actually get better inside? Because if you want to think about it, if you're just a good defensive role player and a good rebounder, what better place to go than the Golden State where you can grab a bunch of rings?
And have fun, too. Looks like they're a fun team. It's not uptight. I mean, even the Bulls. I mean, Michael Jordan used to yell at everybody all the time constantly, right? You know, it wasn't. They had fun, but it was different. Steve Kerr's done a great job and found a great balance there. But you're right. I mean, I can't deny it. The Golden State Warriors look like they're going to be a dynasty for years to come right now. I would say the one team, Dave, would be the San Antonio Spurs, a new-look San Antonio Spurs. And to me, instead of hating on Golden State, I look at other general managers. Figure it out. Get some guys to come here. Put this together. You know, Golden State drafted Curry. They drafted Klay Thompson. They drafted Draymond Green. They did this. I know it's not easy, but they did this. They put this together. But I look at San Antonio, you know, with a healthy Kawhi Leonard, a Chris Paul, and then you trade Aldridge, you get rid of Aldridge, and you bring in, because Aldridge doesn't fit, so you bring in somebody else. So maybe Chris Paul, Kawhi Leonard, and somebody else, and you got a puncher's shot.
Yeah, here's the difficulty, though, if you are those organizations, is you got to set your goals for the next years. And I know the Clippers are having to deal with that. And saying, okay, if we can't beat Golden State anyway, what does our goal become? You know, do we spend a fortune to finish second in the West, or do we just try to do something that electrifies the fan base? I mean, the Houston Rockets probably have the ideal formula. They're going to go out and be real entertaining.
Exactly.
They're not going to beat the Warriors, but they're going to put on a good show. This is what teams like the Clippers have to decide, is if you can't beat them anyway, how much do you spend?
One last thing about this Warriors team. Great team, but I'm not ready to. They're not the greatest team ever. You know, they're one of the greatest teams ever, but I can't definitively say, yeah, this is the greatest team ever, Dave. I mean, I go back to that Lakers team. To me, that'd be a fun series to see. That 87, the Showtime Lakers against this Warriors, style. Because at least they play the same styles, Dave.
Yeah, the Lakers could get up and down the court with them with that little added that even though it was a late career Jabbar, it was still a real effective Jabbar. And that's what Golden State's been able to get away with playing small ball. They haven't had to guard the pivot, you know, that much through any of their playoff runs. Cleveland essentially getting no offense at all out of the number five in that particular matchup. So that would be that one little bugaboo. But one of the things that made the Lakers great, though, the Celtics and the Lakers pushed each other. And that's what made both of those teams in the mid to late 80s really good. Golden State was probably a point and a half or 2 points below potential this year because they just didn't get pushed enough.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd like to see. Somebody push them to the higher level.
It's, I know. Watching Golden State Warriors play, you almost get the feeling of watching a U.S. Olympic team. They've never, you know what I mean, they're trying, and it's like, wow, imagine if they really had real competition. It's like they say that, you know, maybe their practices, like the U.S., the original Dream Team, said their practices were the most competitive thing ever. Let's talk some baseball, Dave, and speaking of all-time greats that hasn't won before, Clayton Kershaw. And I'm starting to get a feeling. I look at the Dodgers, legitimate World Series contenders this year, Dave. It's interesting, this is their first interleague action of the year. And my initial gut thought, Dave, right away, I was like, damn, Clayton Kershaw interleague play must be, you know, must be really tough to bat against Kershaw when you've never seen him before. And I look at the Cleveland Indians lineup. Combined, they have 10 at-bats, one hit, all right? They're in 100, they got 10 at-bats. They've never seen him. A couple of guys have seen him, like two at-bats and stuff like that. Kershaw, 12-4 with a 2.22 earned run average and 28 career interleague starts, Dave.
Yeah, the problem with Kershaw is when you break his subcategories down, they're all good. Home, away, day, night, you know, that doesn't matter. He's just simply good. But here's what's interesting about Kershaw, and we wrote about this in today's Point Blank. Take any random pitcher, and let's say if your earned run average is more than a half run above last year, your xFIP more than a half run, your FIP more than a full run, strikeout percentage down, walk percentage up, ground ball percentage down, swinging strike percentage down. We don't think about this because he's Clayton Kershaw, but he's actually fallen off in every major category across the board. He hasn't been as sharp. And you do wonder, I mean, he's still young, but he's got a lot of innings under his belt. Might we be thinking that Kershaw's peak may have been last year or the year before? So now we're getting with a guy that is really, really good, but just not quite as good as he once was.
And, you know, the Dodgers reportedly, that's one of their top priorities to get some big-time starting pitchers for a playoff run. Dodgers are minus 165 tonight. Bauer gave up four runs and three and a third in his last start, but he's been okay. He's up and down. He's all over the place. You know, I was surprised to see a total of eight and a half on the board here, considering you got Kershaw pitching.
Yeah, and especially, guess who's fresh in the bullpen? Everybody. So who scores in the eighth or ninth inning? I mean, you could make a case the two best relievers in baseball this year have been Jansen and Miller.
Yeah, you're going to have Jansen and Miller out there in the back end.
Yeah, so where does anything come? I mean, yeah, Bauer is so inconsistent, he might give up half the total himself. He may give up four, but everything else is going to take some work. This is going to be, because it's one of the things that really helps Jansen, too. Kershaw goes out there and gives you seven or eight innings from the left-hand side. Jansen looks unhittable then when he comes in there. That's a tough combination to run into. And for people who haven't been watching Jansen this year, a lot of people in the East Coast go to bed early. Hitters aren't even having a chance in a lot of these at-bats. He's just throwing stuff that they can't come close to catching up to.
All right, Dave, unfortunately, we have 2 minutes left. I've been betting against the Astros as of late. Cash another ticket. Loved it with Darvish last night. I don't know. Tonight, I almost get the feeling like I'm trying to rob the same bank 3 days in a row type of deal with Nick Martinez on the hill. But I got to tell you, man, that plus 160 is calling my name, Dave.
Yeah, it is, because Brad Peacock wasn't prepared in spring training to be a starter. So now that he's out there in the rotation for several passes, you just wonder if maybe Peacock wears down or could be a little bit vulnerable. The Astros peaked early. They're not going to be able to maintain the rate that they were on, yet the prices are saying, oh, no, that's who you are. So there is value. And with a couple wins under their belts, Texas has momentum here also. Not a bad take at the price.
And, Dave, the Pittsburgh Pirates, our boy Cam Stewart told me, keep your eye on the Pirates. They're getting healthier. They're starting to put it together a little bit right now. Chatwood's been much better on the road than he has been at home, though. At home, Chatwood, 7.03 ERA, 1.75 whip on the road, 2.52 ERA, 0.97 whip. Rockies always seem to screw me, and we don't have a lot of time, so I just want to throw that out there. And then, speaking of getting screwed over, God, that bullpen's a real problem. A real problem in Washington, Dave. And we're going to talk about this with Cardano in a minute or two. Last night, another five runs late in the ball game. I think tonight, though, the Nationals probably beat them like 14-2 or something.
Yeah, just when are you going to pull the trigger when you're Washington? You know you've got to get help in that closer spot. When are you going to pull the trigger? But I'll tell you the interesting thing about Pittsburgh game, and I think listeners can relate to this, for everything that's gone wrong, look at where they are in the standings. They've managed to stay alive. When you get that motivation, that's when you make corrections.
All right, Dave, we got to get out of here, but play of the day, do you like the over in the Braves-Nats game?
Yeah, it's getting, unfortunately, it's drawn a lot of attention since early today. It's already gone up a half a run, but R.A. Dickey's knuckleball has gone awfully, awfully flat. He may not be good enough to stay in the rotation all season.
Dave Malinsky, read his column over at pregame.com. Dave, it's always a pleasure, sir. Enjoy the U.S. Open.
Okay, good luck, everybody.
Dave Malinsky with us. Mike Cardano joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are now joined by the head of programming, president and director of the Fantasy Sports Radio Networks, the man that was crazy enough to give me and Cam a radio show. Mike Cardano joins us. What's up, Mike?
Look at you. You clean up well.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. I'm all business today. I got to be honest with you. People think that I do this I'm trying to impress or something. This is a bad laundry day for me. It means that, like, my jerseys are wrinkled or, like, you know. I'm such an idiot. Like, I never, like, hang things up after, Mike. Like, I take a football jersey off I wear. I just sort of throw it down. It gets all wrinkled. And I'm like, son of a bitch, it's still clean, but I can't wear it anymore again. It's crazy.
I just assumed you were stopping at a wake or something after the show.
Yeah, I know. This jacket's been to weddings, funerals, and everything else in between. It's my one blazer, man.
That's all right. You wear it well.
People don't know. It's just you mix the shirt up. All right. Last night, NBA Finals, I was on the Warriors. I was on the over. But I had to parlay with the Yankees last night. I went contrarian. I took Tanaka. So first your take on the Warriors. I'm tired of people bitching about, oh, they're boring and they're ruining sports and all this. Whatever, man. They've won twice in the last 3 years. Chill out. Jordan won six times and everybody loved it. People just like to squawk nowadays.
Well, you know, listen, people should like when there's a dynasty because people like to root for the underdog and go against them. So, you know, dynasties, they're good for sports.
They are, and the ratings prove it. I mean, remember in the old days of the Yankees winning all the time? Mike, people liked it because everyone hated the Yankees.
The only thing I never understood with the Yankees, when I was a kid, the Yankees and the Red Sox supposedly had the best rivalry in all of sports. I never understood that when only one team always won. I never understood how it was a rivalry, but
yeah, rivalry. You know, like don't tell that to Bristol. All right, to them, it'll always be the rivalry. Well, to me, growing up as a kid, one of the Yankees' rivals was the Dodgers. They actually played in the World Series all the time, right? Like, they were real rivals. So speaking of the Yankees, Aaron Judge, unbelievable. 495-yard shot the other day. Follows that up with a clutch two-run shot late last night to help give me the victory. So I'm a big fan of the kid. The greatest number 99 since Wayne Gretzky. And I don't know, was Gretzky even good with the Rangers? He might be the best 99 ever in New York. But
yeah, I'm waiting to see if somebody goes triple digits. I don't know. Can you do that in sports? Can you go to triple digit number on your back? Like 107.
I think we're going to probably get to the point. The Yankees are going to retire every number eventually. you can't wear single digits, right?
Not anymore.
I don't know. I remember, Mike, when I was a kid, remember exactly, you and I are the same age, no one wore the number zero. The number zero was for losers. You know what I mean? I was like, not the official jersey. You got number zero because you're not on the team. You know what I mean?
Al Oliver, zero, wasn't he?
Yeah, Scoop.
Yeah. No respect.
He was the first cool Scoop. Yeah, Al Oliver. Pittsburgh Pirates, Montreal Expos.
Yeah.
Great hitter, huh? Scoop.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, good hitter. All right, so speaking of good hitters, I read an article in the New York Daily News today looking at Aaron Judge's numbers, comparing them to Roger Maris in 1961, and they're eerily similar, Mike. It's unbelievable.
You know, the thing is, he's on pace for 200 strikeouts. I don't think people realize that, but he's also on pace for 100 walks. So, I mean, he's got a lot of swing and misses, but his on-base percentage is astounding. It's fantastic.
He's got a pretty good eye, doesn't he? And he does show some patience, right? He just swings through balls sometimes.
He does, but his strikeouts are primarily he's taking pitches, and then it's two strikes, and he gets fooled on a pitch or something like that. I really think he's going to hit for a pretty decent average. I think he's going to keep it up there because he's got a lot of protection around him. I mean, where are you going to pitch around him? They moved him up to the third spot last week. I mean, you've got Gardner, Hicks, Holiday, Castro, Sanchez.
Now Sanchez
Gregorius.
Is starting to heat up a bit too, right? Yep.
I mean, you get down to the eighth spot before you get anybody who can really pitch to. So, I mean, and he takes his walks. He's gonna walk 100 times. So they really can't pitch around him that much. I think he's got something going here.
That's what I was going to ask you. I'm surprised last night. They should have walked him. But are teams going to start walking him more? They almost have to. Or are they going to realize, like you said, you know what? He can strike out. We can strike him out.
Well, the thing is
you almost have to fool him, like you said. The guy's a giant. You're not going to smoke it past him or whatever. You got to trick the kid, you know?
It's interesting. They are walking him. He's on pace to have 105 walks.
Yeah. Well, he's walked 39 times already or 38 times.
But they do feel that they can pitch to him. You know, it's kind of like an oxymoron. At the same time, they feel they can pitch to him because you can strike him out. So the thing is if you look at his BABIP, when he puts the ball in play, it's incredible. And he hits the ball so damn hard. I haven't looked, but I'm guessing, I bet you it's close to 500 when he puts the ball.
All right, just for the record, so Roger Maris he hit 61 home runs. What I don't like is the guy that wrote this article, though, just discounted Bonds and McGuire.
Yeah, they don't realize in New York that 61 is in the record anymore.
Yeah, no, I know. He's like, because I saw the record. I'm like, hey, it's what I thought. I'm like, well, dude, 61's not the record, eh, bro? Like, whether you like it or not, it's not the record. But anyways, Roger Maris had 27 home runs at the end of June. So what, Judge up to 22 right now. I wouldn't be surprised if he was at 30 by the end of the month, actually. Maris hit 13 in July, 11 in August, 9 in September, and then he hit the one, unbelievable. On October the 1st, he hit number 61. And the thing that struck me about this is the Yankees won 108 games that year. They win the pennant. Last game of the year, you had only 23,154 people show up to watch history at the time, which was the real record at the time.
I guess no luxury boxes. Well, you know, they didn't want him to break the record.
I know. That's what people forget, right? No,
they didn't want him to break
it. They never even liked him. They never even liked him.
No, they didn't want him to break the Babe's record. The one thing that he has going for him here, though, is that he's not a classic home run hitter. You know, he probably has as many home runs the other way as he does pulling the ball. And he's just got to hit it square, and it's out no matter where he goes. So I think he's got a decent shot to get to the 60 number at least.
I like what it says here, though. The Yankees' final game of the season is against the Blue Jays on October the 1st. There'll be more than 23,000 people at that one. How many people in New York, how many old-timers have sat around the Bronx and stuff and told people they were there, Mike?
Yeah, more than 23,000, that's for sure.
It's like Blue Monday in Montreal. Remember the Monday, the playoff game, was rain out. Rick Monday hits the home run against Steve Rogers. And it's the same thing in Montreal Lure. Everybody was there. Oh, it broke my heart. Everybody was there. Same crap, Mike. There was like 32,000 people there.
Yeah. And if people aren't old enough to know, they didn't want him to break that record in the way. They didn't want him to hit more home runs than Mantle that year.
Okay, so that's what I was going to say. So for younger people, a lot of young people are dumb and don't care about history, but people don't realize that. They love Mickey Mantle. Maris wasn't their guy, and they didn't want Maris breaking Babe Ruth's record.
No, they didn't even want him hitting more home runs than Mantle that year. And he may not even have until Mantle got hurt. during the season.
And if you look at Yankees lore, it's true. Joe DiMaggio, you know, he's, they love him. Mickey Mantle, you know, Seinfeld episodes, you know what I mean? Joe DiMaggio references and stuff. There's no Roger Maris dunking his donut, you know what I mean? Like, nobody really talks. Like, Maris doesn't get his due in the Yankee lore, it seems.
No, that cast him, I don't even know where he went. Where did he go afterwards? St. Louis?
Yeah, I think St. Louis, yeah.
Yeah, and he was a good all-around ball player.
But it's bizarre, right?
Like, yeah.
What was it? He was too clean cut? You know, like they were like, you know what, look at this guy. He's doing Marilyn Monroe. What are you doing? You know, Babe Ruth was a big fat drinking guy. It was almost like he was too clean cut for everyone. It's bizarre.
That's why they brought Joe Pepitone on the team.
All right. What do we got for tonight here? I talked about this with Walensky, but whatever, man. It's not even a joke anymore. You know, you're losing baseball games to the Atlanta Braves 11-10. You got a freaking problem with your bullpen, man. It's a joke. It's a joke. It's a joke right now in Washington.
There's only 7 weeks to the trade deadline. You know, they're talking about maybe Kelvin Herrera from KC. Who else are they going to get? Bud Norris if Cam Bedrosian comes back? But he's not a difference maker. I really don't know what valid options they have. It's going to be interesting if they try to do something within or if they go out and get somebody or promote
They've
some
They've got no hope in hell in winning in the playoffs with what they have now. We've got less than a minute, Mike. Who do you like tonight?
Rockies and Pirates? Do the people realize that the Rockies have the best record in the National League or no? They're underdog tonight against Cole, who couldn't get you or I out at the moment. So I'm taking that plus 105. And then Marlins. Minus 122 tonight. I love them against Jarrell Cotton tonight. Stanton will be back.
Yeah,
oh,
Cotton.
By the way, Anthony Rizzo hitting number one in the lineup tonight against the Mets.
Yeah, how about the Mets? Winners of four straight. Did they win again tonight?
No.
No?
No.
I know. I'm tempted with the Cubs, minus 35 with Lester. Thanks, Mike.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Mike Cardano is plays it today. Next. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. Let's start off with the Washington Nationals. Hopefully they score enough runs so their piece of crap bullpen can't screw this up tonight, because we're going to lay a run and a half with the Washington Nationals. Oh, God, it doesn't sound right saying this out loud. But let's go over the number. It was 9.5. It could be up to 10. We're at the time of the year right now suddenly, guys. You're like, what the hell's going on? There's all this baseball line movement because there's no basketball anymore, hockey to bet on. Everybody's betting on baseball, so there's a lot of line movement. I like the Jays tonight with Estrada on the hill to get it done against the Rays. Clayton Kershaw on the road tonight, first interleague play. It's tough enough against Kershaw, man. It's even harder when you've never seen him before. Kershaw 12-4 all-time in interleague play. I like the Dodgers minus 160, 65 cents tonight. I like the under 8 runs. Where are the runs going to come from? You got the two best bullpens. You got the Dodgers. You got the Tribe. You've got Kershaw. All you need is Bauer not to suck completely, and that's why I'm taking the Dodgers. Texas Rangers plus 165. Got to take it again. And the Yankees, why not? Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours, mine. Screw the book. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.